It's time for Supply Chain Now. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia. Heard around the world, Supply Chain Now spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. And now, here are your hosts.
Hey, good afternoon. Scott Luton here with you, along with my special co-host, Ben Harris. Welcome to today's episode of Supply Chain Now. Ben, we've got a great episode teed up. We're continuing our Supply Chain City series here on Supply Chain Now, powered by our friends at SAP. Are you strapped in, ready to go?
I'm ready to go. It's going to be another great episode. We have Mike back this week, obviously, and having Rick from Clorox, I think I could not be happier about our guest today.
I'm with you. And the repeat guests. We love our repeat guests here. So, you know, this Supply Chain City series, of course, yeah, it focuses on best practices and leaders and companies and innovations across the Supply Chain City, Metro Atlanta. However, no matter where you are, you're going to learn best practices, insights, you name it, key takeaways that'll help increase your supply chain IQ. So stay tuned for a great conversation here today. Before we get started, quick programming note. If you enjoyed today's conversation, be sure to find us and subscribe so you don't miss a single conversation. So Ben, with no further ado, you've already let the cat out of the bag. Let's say hello to our official featured guest here today, Rick McDonald, Vice President Global Operations with the Clorox Company. Rick, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Great to be here again, and thanks for having me back, Scott.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure having Rick McDonald with us. Looking forward to the latest installment. And Mike Lackey, Global Vice President of Solution Management, Digital Manufacturing with SAP. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Scott. It's great to be here. It's always a pleasure when you have a partner like Rick here as well. So look forward to it and hearing what Ben's got going on for us here locally. So this is terrific.
Ben, Mike is shooting up the charts in terms of number of appearances here at Supply Chain Now. We love
it. He is. Hopefully by design. I think that's good right. thing. So yeah, that's good news.
Had a lot of good feedback on these earlier episodes, and we're really appreciative of our continued partnership with SAP and the Metro Atlanta Chamber. And Ben, we should just remind everybody, of course, you serve as Director of Supply Chain, Bioscience, and Manufacturing with the Metro Atlanta Chamber. So great to have your continued partnership as well. We're going to start right there. So now we've kind of introduced everybody. We're all dialed in for a great conversation. But Ben, give us a couple of updates from the Supply Chain City News Desk.
I'm going to try to keep it to what's going on in Supply Chain City specifically. So we just had a new investment actually in Henry County, just south. It's kind of the south metro area. A lot of distribution down that area. And of course, Ken's Foods. If you've ever had any sauces, dressings, and oils, and things of that nature, Ken's has about over 500 different SKUs that they make in that category. And they just had a recent expansion of their manufacturing and distribution facility down there. They have actually, with the other number of 500, they have over 500 employees actually at that facility as well. They're actually growing to 570 employees with this expansion. So really exciting, over 340,000 square foot expansion down there. So I couldn't be happier for a nice brand name CPG company with a great expansion here in the metro area.
Love that. Love their salad dressings in particular. Our family's been eating their salad dressings for a number of years. So that's really cool to have that local connection. What else you got, Ben?
One other thing, we've actually starting a new employer workforce forums. It's actually a joint workforce forums between actual employers within the Metro Atlanta region and also some of the stakeholders themselves who are interested in those jobs. So as you think about what's going on with the pandemic, obviously, and a lot of people out of work in many cases, but logistics and supply chain has actually had a lot of employment gain from a lot of that. So we're actually going to have this industry forum to talk through. We're going to have five or six different employers who are going to talk through their needs, what they're looking for, from the employer perspective, and then some of the folks who are job searching out there to be on the panel as well to talk through, you know, kind of what they're looking for and how we can kind of get some alignment there. So, Rick, I probably need to send that to you here soon enough. Maybe you could join that conversation as well. Probably a good opportunity. And Mike, even for SAP in Atlanta, that might be a nice opportunity as well. So that's coming up actually next week. And I'm going to post actually afterwards we can do to some of our listeners. We can send that link to them if that's okay, Scott.
Yeah, that'd be great. And I think you've got one other announcement with local ties, and then we're going to get a quick update from Mike, who's been out in the trenches. So Ben, what other little surprise you got for us?
Yeah, so Coupa Software actually just acquired our friends at LlamaSoft. As many of you know, LlamaSoft has been, they've been doing some of the network analysis and inventory management stuff for a long time. But yeah, they're probably best known for inventory management and that really network analysis piece in there. Yeah, they were just acquired, publicly traded company, Coupa Software, pretty big acquisition. So, I mean, I think it continues that trend here in the metro area of a lot of these companies are looking for additional solutions. And a company like Coupa, who's really more in kind of the fintech space, I think it's interesting. You know, they're looking more in supply chain and in that space and kind of try to kind of marry their systems together for more of a end-to-end digital solution, which, you know, we talk about supply chain today, that's really what it is, as we move from more of a distribution-based society here to that of more of a digital society. So very, very exciting opportunity for them.
You know, Ben, that was a very interesting acquisition. I get this competitive intelligence reports anytime something like that happens. It was a pretty interesting write-up. I did not realize LlamaSoft was so, you know, had a big presence here in Atlanta, but that's terrific. And, you know, you're going to see this consolidation continues to happen, and it's going to be some interesting, you know, why did they come together and what comes out in the next 1 to 2 years is going to be pretty impressive for, you know, for the industry. So that was an interesting one.
Good point. You know, and that planning space is hot. Everybody's looking
it to is.
Invest and in how to look around corners and then the next corner as best we can. So really neat news there. And Mike, one final thing before we dive more into kind of refreshing our audience's understanding of y'all's background, you had a really neat tour opportunity here lately, right?
Yeah, you know, being shut down with COVID-19 and not flying so much, you know, I think Delta misses me. I spent more time with Delta than I was at home. But yeah, I got the pleasure and the opportunity to sit down with Kings Hawaiian. I don't, you know, most people know them, the dinner roll manufacturer, expanding out to talk about where they're going in the future. And their largest plant is up in Flowery Branch, Georgia. I was totally impressed with that facility, how large it was, how efficient it was. 75% of their manufacturing in North America is done here in Atlanta. And that was pretty impressive. And the other impressive thing, you know, I thought the greatest thing I'd ever tasted was back when I used to go down to Pasta Leon to that Krispy Kreme and get that donut right off the conveyor belt. I got to tell you, getting their rolls right out of the oven, it ranked right up there. But impressive facility. I would tell you of all the facilities I've been around the world, it was probably one of the top 10. It was phenomenal how efficient it was, what they're trying to do, their vision. And we had a really good conversation in how we can help them in the supply chain, in manufacturing, achieve where they're going in the future. So yeah, it was great to get, you know, put on a Start shirt and find a jacket and it still fit. So I was pretty pleased with that. So it was good.
Well, you know, we'll have to have them on a future show. And one quick follow-up to that 85 corridor northeast of town, really. I mean, from a manufacturing standpoint, of course, Ryogi has been up there. I think Yamaha's got a plant up there. Mm-hmm. And then all the distribution facilities up there, it's really grown. They've done a nice job encouraging development and providing opportunities for folks. So really neat. We all love our plant tours, and we look forward to getting back in the facility soon enough. So, Rick, as we kind of segue, we want to, since we're fortunate to have both you and Mike and, of course, Ben with us on numerous shows, so folks kind of, they probably already remember you and some of your journey and some of your thought leadership, but let's refresh their memory real quick. So, Rick, tell us a little about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So, I grew up in Atlanta, mostly Atlanta. Went to Georgia Tech, played a little bit of baseball there. What I'm going to say next will tell you about the extent of my baseball career there. The highlight was being an extra in a Burt Reynolds movie called Sharky's Machine. But in all seriousness, it was a lot of fun playing with the guys, and ACC baseball is pretty special. When I graduated from Tech, I went to work for Frito-Lay. I spent 10 years at Frito and 5 different manufacturing plants across the Midwest and the Northeast. And then I came to Clorox, and it'll be 29 years in January, which I couldn't have imagined at the time I started with the company, but I've had a bunch of interesting assignments. I get to work with a great group of people, and really proud of what we do as an organization.
Wow. Well, congrats on your pending 29th, and looking forward to making it a whole 30 here right around the corner. And thanks again for joining us. All right, so Mike, we've really enjoyed your stories of growing up just on up the Peachtree Industrial Corridor, if I can remember correctly. So tell us about yourself.
Yeah, just right outside of, you know, Lawrenceville, Georgia out here. Grew up on the farm, got the pleasure of you know, of attending that North Avenue Trade School that Rick mentioned here, you know, one of the finest engineering schools in the country, and being able to have a career that, you know, went from there straight into manufacturing, the high tech, and then from, you know, high tech manufacturing on a global basis to providing software, that what we used to do with, you know, time studies and spreadsheets. And so I've been very fortunate, been at SAP now about 15 years, came from a local acquisition here in Atlanta, one of those startups, Ben, we were talking about, that came out of Atlanta and made it successful. And Rick, I'm betting if you went to Frito-Lay right out of Georgia Tech, you're an industrial engineer as well.
Yeah, industrial management degree, but I got to practice, took a lot of industrial engineering electives, got to practice that a lot at Frito.
When I was at Tech, you know, probably way before Rick, there was, Frito-Lay was hiring everybody. They took top of the class every time, so.
Mike, I was kicking myself. I got one quick follow-up for you. So last time you were with us, I asked you a really dumb question. I asked you what your least favorite chore on the farm was. And I want to flip that. And growing up on the farm, what was your favorite things about growing up on a farm?
The space. You know, it's not like, you had to use your imagination, right? It wasn't, if you want to go play with someone, it was at least, if you're walking, it's a, you know, 30-minute walk to the next place or that. And then, you know, luckily bicycles and motorcycles came around and you could get there. So, you know, it helped you use your imagination more than sitting in front of this little screen that we see today. So I just think the space we had and, you know, the amount of animals and the, you know, the birth of life was kind of pretty cool. You know, you got to see a lot of things that kind of realize how big this world is and how small we are. So it was kind of cool, but the space was the biggest thing I probably missed the most.
Love that. Love that. I grew up in the woods building forts and the whole nine yards, and I really wish my kids could take advantage of those same things, but good stuff there. All right. So Ben, we're going to keep driving. And before you take a deeper dive into the Clorox company and learn more about what Rick and the organization has been experiencing here 2020, I got one more quick follow-up question for both Rick and Mike. And Rick, we'll start with you. Here in the lockdown era and the quarantine era and the historically challenging year that 2020 has been for all of us, what's been one habit or new hobby that you've picked up that you've really enjoyed?
Working from home, I haven't worn long pants in a long time. That's that might be true for a lot of us. Actually, one of the things I did was I bought a raised bed garden, and I planted a whole bunch of herbs, legal ones. And I've been harvesting those through the summer and creating my own little spice mix. So that's been a fun distraction.
Love that. All right. So Mike, same question. What's a habit or hobby you picked up here this year?
Being it, you know, as my wife told me, in 32 years of marriage, I've been home the last 7 months than I have in those 32 years. You know, I got back into woodworking. I started, part of our house is unfinished. And I started building, my wife calls it the wall that goes nowhere. But, you know, putting a tongue and groove wall in and just working with wood, something that was just, it's like manufacturing, right? You work with your hands, and when you get through, you actually produce something that you could see and admire. So, yeah, I keep building these walls. They don't really go anywhere, but they're kind of therapeutic, and it's been fun. I've enjoyed that.
Love that. And that's the word that came to my mind right when both of y'all were sharing, that therapeutic, that kind of your alone time where you're producing and it's got your attention and you can take it off all the emails and phone calls and conference calls. So good stuff there. All right. So Ben, we're going to keep moving. And then we're going to dive into Clorox now, right?
Yes. Yes, we are. So Rick, tell us about, you know, just kind of Clorox as a company, and then kind of how does Clorox the company, you know, what does the footprint kind of look like here in Metro Atlanta as well?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. So we're 8,800 people strong. We're based in Oakland, California, and we're a 107-year-old branded consumer packaged goods company. About $7 billion in annual sales. And we sell our products in over 100 countries, and we have Clorox people working in 23 different countries globally. You know, in the Atlanta area, we've got about 1,000 supply chain professionals. We've got a huge group in the Alpharetta area, another big group in Kennesaw, a couple of manufacturing plants in South Atlanta. And so we are well represented here in the Metro Atlanta area.
And what about, you know, as far as your role specifically? I know you're obviously SVP of Global Operations, but, you know, what does that mean, I guess, for at Clorox?
Yeah, so I've got 8,800 people, about 5,000 of them are in my shop. We're responsible for manufacturing, logistics, planning, engineering, quality assurance, continuous improvement, just almost everything in the supply chain except for sourcing and project management. And I've just got a great team that I get to work with every day.
I know we'll talk about that team here in just a bit, but as far as the, 2020, you know, Scott mentioned it previously, but it's been tough on a lot of different businesses. It's been good, I think, for Clorox's business, but just keeping up with demand, I know, has been tough, as we talked about on one of our previous episodes. But building on, you know, kind of what we talked about last episode, what has 2020 been like, you know, for the Clorox company?
It's been an incredible 9 months of unprecedented demand. And, you know, I'll quickly recap some things I said in May. You know, we actually got a little bit of a head start on building inventory. We sensed that this was going to be an issue, and we started building inventory, adding shifts, hiring people, going outside and finding external manufacturing line time that we could buy. We did as much of that as we could. We wanted to create all the capacity we could to really produce more disinfecting products. And so it's been an incredible challenge, but also an honor to know that our products are helping to keep families safe, keep individuals safe, healthcare facilities, doctors' offices. Our disinfecting suite of products are really pretty remarkable. You know, our volume has been up as much as like 500% on some items versus normal.
Wow.
And, you know, what we thought might abate in the summer months or maybe even coming into the fall, it just hasn't. The volume's continued. And, you know, of all the challenges you can have as a business, this is one we're grateful to have. You know, at the same point in time, I'd want everybody to know that we're doing everything we can to make as much product as we possibly can across all of our businesses, because it's not just the disinfecting suite of products that has realized the demand signal. Our Hidden Valley Ranch line of salad dressings, Glad trash bags, Brita water filters, Kingsford charcoal. We posted in this last quarter increased volume levels in 8 of the 10 business segments. And so it's all of them that are experiences this run-up in demand as people spend more time at home and are using our products as part of that.
That's funny. I forget how many different products that Clorox has, because you think about, okay, Clorox itself, you know, a CPG company, but just from a consumer goods standpoint, I mean, there's so much else that you guys do. What does the mix look like for you guys, you know, retail versus wholesale? You know, how has that changed really for 2020?
You know, we're mostly a retail business, but certainly our professional products business has been extraordinarily strong as well. You know, devices and the juice that powers those devices has been a real key to large disinfecting initiatives that companies are using in their environments. But we're mostly a retail business, and that's just continuing to be stronger and stronger as consumers are seeking out our products. You know, quick fact for the group to know is that we're making about a million canisters of Clorox disinfecting wipes a day. And, you know, you think about that, but also think about the fact that in the first 6 months of the year, we made 100 million more units of disinfecting products than we made in the year ago timeframe. Don't think about it in the Clorox context. Think about it in the overall supply chain context. Our suppliers, our logistics providers, all of them had to pivot with us and be incredibly adaptable and flexible at a time when really nobody knew what was going on or how long it was going to continue. And we're just grateful to have such tremendous supply chain partners up and down our supply chain that could go with us as these unprecedented levels of volume came about.
Yeah, and you mentioned the partners. I mean, and of course, those partners are people, basically. So you mentioned back in May about your staff, and you were had nothing but wonderful things to say about how they pivoted, obviously, during this pandemic. Any recent anecdotes or anything you can share with us around, you know, some amazing stories there, or, you know, kind of how your staff has adapted to this tough challenge?
You know, Ben, I would say really a continuation of our story. You know, our 8,800 strong, about 4,000 of them work in our manufacturing plants. They're really our heroes. They've been showing up to work every day, all day for literally months, producing record levels of volume to try and support what consumers and families and healthcare facilities need. And I was just down in our Atlanta West and our Atlanta Main facilities last week, walking around thanking folks for what they were doing and having a look at the operations. And I can tell you, there's just a lot of pride in individuals who work in those facilities and the rest of our facilities about the type of work they get to do and the products they're making and the impact they're having on the health and safety of lives of people around the world.
I love that. That's been one of the silver linings that I know we've talked about. We can't talk enough about it. whether truck drivers or production associates or folks that are in our factories, in our DCs, in our fulfillment centers, right, keeping the whole world moving forward. And now it seems like there's a greater awareness of that, and there's a greater appreciation of that. And that is certainly something I hope sticks around for a long time. So, Rick, as a leader, I really appreciate your passion around that. And Mike and Ben, last time Rick was with us, he shared a few links where their employees were, team members were interviewed by NBC and NPR and a few others. And you could collect how they had the team members had a new sense of pride about this noble mission that they're on. And those are some beautiful stories. So Rick, really appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, thanks, Scott.
Let's switch gears. So Mike, one of the things we really enjoyed you on these episodes is you have all these conversations with business leaders. And while you may not be in as many plants as you typically are, like you alluded to earlier, still you're seeing a wide variety of business models, you name it. You know, what's been a few of your latest experiences and some anecdotes, story time with Mike Lackey? What are some things that you can share with us?
Yeah, it's funny. My daughter asked me again, Dad, what do you do? And I said, well, I tell stories. That's kind of what I seem to be doing the most. But I got to commend Rick and him. I mean, the Clorox story and their impact on this pandemic is terrific. And for a company of the size of Clorox and to get the supply chain turned that quickly and to have the foresight, it's pretty phenomenal, Rick. I can tell you this. My house has never looked this good with the Clorox outdoor cleaner I've used. So I can tell you that I'm one of the reasons you got that spot.
I appreciate that. Thanks for that, Mike.
Yeah, my wife's pointing out things I didn't know needed to be cleaned, and the Clorox outdoor cleaner does it. So, you know, it's funny. Rick has a very positive story, and not everybody was in the category where COVID-19 has had a positive impact. You know, this week I was talking with the company and they just happened to be in Europe, and you know, Europe's getting ready to do another shutdown for COVID-19. And these guys make 171 million units of cleaning and home care products, but their supply chain was not as nimble. And so what they really had to do is across their global operations is they had to integrate their production lines, get better planning, and really get full transparency of what their capabilities was, you know, what they were, what could they actually do. And it went from not capacity, but more to agility into the plants. They looked at more, you know, mixed mode production. You know, I listened to Rick talk about, I got charcoal over here and, you know, making disinfectant wipes over here. You know, if one business is down, how can I move that production? Is there common processes that we may not think of that are there? So that's been one of their struggles. Now in this, that we've been able to work with them, and they had a focus on that digital transformation, and they've increased production by 18%, production efficiency and performance. They can get 18% more out of their critical factories than they could back 7 months ago. And that's really focusing on, you know, tying the production lines in production into the supply chain and into the planning, you know, getting a head start on planning. So, you know, we're starting to see more and more of that. The other interesting thing is the pharma industry. You know, a lot of that got outsourced and it's coming back. And we're having a lot of conversations about, you know, the factory staying FDA, CFR 21 Part 11 compliant, you know, repeatable processes so they can be FDA certified, you know, how quickly we can get those plants, that certification up and going, and what the supply chain is going to look like. But, you know, what we talked about last time, it wasn't getting the workers back in the factory safely. We all found a way to do it. I didn't have material. I didn't have components to run the factories. And that's why the impact on supply chain and the impact supply chains have had has been terrific. So, and that's the big thing we're still talking with. Companies are starting to move and take action and rethink themselves post COVID-19.
And you mentioned safety in the facilities, seen a resurgence of interest there. And that's wonderful. Hopefully that sticks around for a long time as well. So going back to pharma, I was reading in the Wall Street Journal a few months ago, you were talking about legit pharma, Mike. It's interesting, this article talked about how the illicit pharmaceutical supply chains were being disrupted because of they weren't getting their supplies from overseas. So that might be another great silver lining to what we've been experiencing here.
You know, Scott, it's funny. What I learned is companies are telling me this pandemic's done one thing. we know what we do really well, and we know what we do really bad. So it's brought a new focus to what we should be on here. And let's look at in the market. If we start flushing out some of these illegitimate drugs and stuff and start flushing that out and getting back to what is healthy for the environment, you know, for the environment, for the customers and our people, we're going to be better off for it. So there is a silver lining in a lot of ways. It's just, we just got to get back and get back to normal, some state of the new normal, right? So that
Agreed.
All plants are starting to run again. I love the story Ben gave, 550 new jobs that are coming here to Atlanta. That's just terrific. That's what it's great to be here in Atlanta in the South. It's just driving more and more, you know, innovation and jobs here.
And that innovation, you know, in a really true sense, I mean, that's certainly, if you look over to over this year and going back to the end of last year, you know, companies knowing and finally identifying these challenges, these new challenges, new twists on old challenges, and just finding a way to accomplish it and get the right product, the right price on time to their consumers. And so much of that innovation is going to make the industry better. And of course, we've also heard, I've seen various reports of there being all of this together and how supply chain's been front and center in media, in news stories. Our politicians are saying the word supply chain, the phrase supply chain, and it's elevating the career and the professions. And those are also good news. So if you look hard enough, despite all the challenge and a lot of the bad news out there, there's still lots of good news.
So Scott, I think you need to do a session on supply chain 101 for politicians. They're using a word they need to really understand the impact this thing could have. And that's, I think Rick could do a very good job of teaching that to these guys, but a big word, but the impact it has on so many aspects.
I agreed.
Our everyday life is incredible. So
I think Rick would make a wonderful, wonderful instructor. Now, whether he'd want to do that, it's a whole different ballgame maybe, but I agree with you. And regardless, the first step is that awareness. And if we can continue educating beyond that, we'll be in a better spot. So Ben, I want to get you back involved here. We're touching on a lot of the different things there. We're about to dive into Industry 4.0 and get some of Mike's predictions maybe of what we're going to see. But based on whether it's good news or innovation or some of the challenges the industry's seen, Ben, what comes to your mind?
As far as what's coming up for next year or kind of what's...
So what Mike and Rick have shared is, I think a lot of it is invigorating for folks that love and are passionate about the supply chain profession. And I know you are. What's one thing they've shared, or if you want to break out your crystal ball first, that's perfectly fine. Lots of options here, Ben.
Oh gosh, that's tough. I mean, we talked about digital twin. I think last time, Mike, we talked, it was about some of the stuff around, industry 4.0. And that was one that I thought had a lot of potential for future investment, whether you're you're Georgia Pacific and you're looking at, forestry and, harvesting models and things of that nature. I mean, that's huge business for them to be able to model that, going forward. But I would say more than anything, really just the pandemic itself and how companies are having to completely rethink, what we can do, as organizations. I'll give you one example, Scott. The GHC3, or the Global Health Crisis Coordination Center, which we set up here in Atlanta to handle just that crisis coordination because of what was going on with COVID, they've come up with an actual algorithm that will be used worldwide. This is based in Atlanta, but it'll be used worldwide on how they're going to distribute vaccines to the most efficient, effective models and to the people that need them most. And that's coming out of Atlanta right here. So really, really exciting that, that this pandemic, even through this, that we're seeing that type of innovation throughout that. So I think the modeling aspect that we're going to see, and then, of course, the advanced analytics and algorithms. I think it's just amazing what we've been able to do and how companies have pivoted using that technology.
Love that, Ben, and great call out because global supply chains moment is here. We've got this. We talked about Noble Mission earlier with the great team at Clorox and how they've been able to fight through and produce more to make us all safer and cleaner, you name it. But now we've got to come together as a global profession and make sure everyone, no matter where you are, have access to a vaccine that it's a huge challenge. So that's going to be a good story. We're going to, if anyone can figure it out, put it in a headlock, figure it out, it is the global supply chain profession.
That's
so
right.
Let's talk about 2021. I know we're all ready to flip the calendar for sure. So Mike, Industry 4.0, automation, digital transformation, digital twin has been put at all of these hot topics. Give us a couple observations and maybe even predictions if you're game for coming months.
I think you're going to see, we're going to put the foot on the pedal right now. I think you can see acceleration of digital, this digital transformation. Companies are trying to decide what they're going to be like and what's it going to be in the future. And, you know, for 7 months of this, 8 months, they're starting to figure out what the future is going to look like. You know, it's not about being competitive. It's really been about being about survival, right? And we don't know when this thing's going to end, but you're kind of putting the time out there. And what is my company going to look like? Am I going to be manufacturing the same thing or the same business today? They're all looking at expanding out. But this transformation has to happen in manufacturing and operations. It is going to have to happen in the supply chain. You know, we cannot be single threaded in the supply chain. We found out the hard way. Supply chains are going to come closer to the factories, so that I've got that supply line. You know, I think I'm just going to take a button and everything, so I'm going to be like Clorox, right? You know, I got my supply chain, you know, I got it primed, I got it ready to go, and it's delivering, and I'm delivering on those commitments. So I think what you're really going to see is this acceleration of innovation. Look, my customers ask me for this. Mike, I need 3 to 5 years of innovation in the next 18 months. I need, you know, I can't wait 5 years to roll out 40 plants. I need them done in 18 months. And so, you know, you're going to see the advancement of cloud computing, you know, and edge computing to make that happen. And, you know, we're going to see more and more beyond the digital twin to that digital thread that's monitoring, you know, representation of how it's designed, how it was manufactured, how it was delivered, how it was maintained in the field, that life cycle that's going to be fed back into companies that's going to make them, innovation is going to start accelerating at a level we haven't seen in the past either. So, you know, coming out this end, as soon as we can put a date on this, I think the level of innovation from all aspects, not just manufacturing supply chain, but what companies are going to deliver, products as a service and things like that, are you're going to see some, it's going to accelerate right now.
I love that, Mike. And I love going back what you shared there, kind of tongue in cheek. We all want to be like the Clorox company when we get older and we grow up. And Rick, that's got to be pretty inspiring. There might be, who knows, there might be some underoos with Clorox out there for our young ones to buy.
Well, I appreciate those kind words, Mike. It's been an amazing year. And, you know, our hearts go out to everybody who has really suffered from this pandemic. We're proud to be part of what stops the spread of infection and keeps people healthy. And we recognize it's just an incredible responsibility.
Well put. I want to ask you a question, Mike. And then we hear so much, well, I'll call it digital transformation evangelism. And that's a good thing, right? There's a lot of really smart people out there that are help, you know, like you're sharing, help companies move it ahead. But my hunch is you see some companies, maybe with some common themes with some of the missteps that might be taking place when it comes to digital transformation. So if you had to point to one thing that maybe a lot of companies are taking the wrong step and you're seeing it time and time again, what would come to mind?
The biggest mistake I see, companies start with a technology strategy and not a business strategy. I mean, when, you know, 2 years ago, I want Industry 4.0. I said, great, what business problem are you trying to solve? They couldn't tell me that. They wanted, and if you apply technology for the sake of applying technology, your business problems are going to be magnified. So you start with a business strategy and, you know, for Rick and I, a manufacturing strategy, and then you apply technology to it. Too many times companies are starting with a technology strategy and trying to, you know, mold the business or the manufacturing strategy into it. And that's the big mistake. You got to start with your business, the business problem, and then let's apply technology to solve real problems. And we think that's simple here because we talk about it a lot, but a lot of mistakes out there because we're starting with technology, not the business.
Yeah, Mike, I really agree with that. That's a really well said phrase there around starting with technology first. The way that we talk about it is mindset, skill set, tool set. And what you find is most everybody wants to run straight to the tool set without necessarily stepping back and saying, okay, what is my strategy in this space? What are the problems I'm trying to solve? And do I have the right leadership mindset? Because let's face it, we got 5 generations in the workforce. We don't all think about technology the same. If I've got that right, do I have the skill set? And so what do I have to do to upskill or reskill the folks, the crew that I have already, to be able to handle the new technology and the new integration of digital tools? And then you can start thinking about the tool set. Now, you don't have a lot of time to necessarily do those things sequentially, but if you start with the tool set, I feel like you're not going to get it right from the jump. And it's really got to be strategy led and then flowing all the way through to the tools.
Well, it's a healthy dose of practicality is what I'm hearing there. And instead of just wanting to get the latest technology and figuring out how to apply it later, figuring out those business challenges and the appropriate technology and the appropriate way to implement it with the shortest learning curve possible, to your point, Mike, because we got to accelerate. I love what you said there about, you know, companies and leadership and organizations. We don't have time for the 6-year or 16-year projects that seem like have been taking place for years. All right. So Ben and Mike, I'm gonna circle back around to y'all. We're gonna take the conversation even broader, because there's no shortage of topics we're all tracking in a year like 2020. And Rick, I want to start with you. So when you are surveying global supply chain, global business that we're all kind of speaking to, what's one trend or challenge or topic that maybe we haven't talked about yet that you're tracking more than others?
Yeah, it's a terrific question. You know, one of the things that I think we all face is just this compression of time, and anything in our supply chains that leads to touches, manual activity, data latency, inability to get to insights faster is going to slow us down. And the one thing that I'm tracking in service of the compression of time is just the rapid advancement of omni-channel retailing behaviors, the advancement of e-commerce retail platforms and capabilities, and how critical it is for my supply chain and all of our supply chains to be able to run at the speed of business. You know, it's my feeling that advancements in omni-channel and the e-commerce space have accelerated over this last 6-7 month period. We may have had 5 years worth of activity in that space happen in the last 6 or 7 months. And so this is really going to be a thing that that we are keenly interested in and tracking closely to make sure that we're keeping up and that we can run at the speed of business.
Love that. And Mike, my hunch is you love that too, because he's embodying your accelerant commentary.
Yeah, you know, omni-channels, I mean, how you sell today. I was talking to a retailer, right? They make, God, probably the most major brands of athletic shoes. And they said, well, look, we have 100 of our own retail stores at the beginning of 2020. We'll be down to maybe 10 by the end of 2020. So that's changing. But one of the biggest things, how we can accelerate, the one thing that I'm really tracking is the cloud. Okay, we're all, you know, you have your iPhone, you back up your music and stuff. When manufacturing, there's three things that's got to happen. Number one is performance. Okay, we can't have seconds in the cloud. It has to be sub-seconds. I have to attach to that equipment, collect the data, analyze it, and tell that machine to go or no go in about 150 milliseconds. Okay, and half my customers, they were sitting here that I've talked with, says, hey, Mike, I told you 50 milliseconds, not 150. You know, so they're pushing that envelope. The second piece is 24/7, always on. So we have to get down to the edge. We have to get to the plant with the ability to stay connected. And if we lose that connection to the cloud, you know, that the plant still runs. Because if you don't run the plant, you don't ship. You don't ship, you don't deliver, you don't deliver, you don't invoice, you don't invoice, you can't collect. So this is mission critical. And then the third part is security. And that's what my customers are pushing me on, our manufacturing solutions at SAP, every day. And the cloud, with the cloud, you can roll out 40 plants in that compressed time period versus the on-prem piece of it. But we still have to have the same performance as if everything's set at the plant or in a data center. And I'd be honest with you, working with these hyperscalers like Microsoft Azure and AWS, you know, Amazon, those guys are bringing another set of technology that we're going to take advantage of and get down to that plant level and to that machine level and give you that type of capability. So, you know, performance, security, and always on. Those are the three things that are driving what we're pushing through, the innovation you're going to see coming out of us and in manufacturing in general in the next, you know, the next few months. My release is coming out here in November. So,
Mike, I love it. I'm a big checklist nerd. My wife and I both are. And we've got performance 24/7, always on, and security there. And then Rick, going back to something I couldn't quite grab my pen quick enough. You're talking about mindset, skill set. What was that third one?
Tool set.
Love that.
Flashy toys in the corner that everybody loves to run to. And it's really, really tempting. We all do it. And we just have to take a step back. And as Mike said, start with strategy first, identify the problem you're trying to solve, and then figure out the tools that will be most effective.
Love that. What a practical framework there. So appreciate y'all both sharing. All right, Ben, global business, global supply chain, what are you tracking?
I think, Mike, building on your point, talking about the technology piece, you know, building on the, what we talked about with the cloud. I mean, I have a question for you. I was thinking about versionless software these days. You know, when we talk about upgrades, you know, on your side of the business, Mike, you know, from product development, and you talk about you've got a new version or a new, you know, release coming out. But from Rick's, you know, standpoint as the consumer or the customer, you know, using that technology, are y'all moving more into the space where, you know, it's really versionless and where Rick doesn't really, he's not going to see that upgrade per se or not feel that upgrade as much as he used to, where it used to be these big implementations you would have, you know, for big software and so forth. And now it's gone to more of a cloud type, you know, approach. It's a little more, you know, it's not so tough like the old days. Is that what you guys are trying to get to?
Ben, the beauty of the cloud is you can get the innovation automatically. And with the on-prem software, we have one major release per year, maybe one or two service packs or the amount we have. In the cloud, every 90 days, we're pushing new innovation out to our cloud customers. Every 90 days. You don't have to download it. It is automatically pushed out to you. Now, we're notifying our customers and, you know, Rick would know what's coming. And, you know, we're not going to surprise them. But, yeah, with the cloud, you are able to push it out to everyone and not have to do the install and all that, because we're doing a lot of the testing and on the front end for us so that we can get it out to you. So yeah, the innovation, you're right, Ben, the innovation through the cloud is going to be made available more readily and really pushed out versus that, hey, let me plan for it. That's not one of the other big advantages at the speed at which I can innovate for our customers and the other technology players as well.
It's just that easy, isn't it, Mike? Just that easy. All right. So I'd love to just bolt on a couple more hours here. I love the practical expertise, Ben, we're hearing from Mike and Rick. Been there, done that. That's what really makes some of our best episodes. But, you know, Ben, as we start to wrap, we're going to make sure our audience can connect with everybody. I got to put you on the spot. What's one really cool thing I shared with me? It was these checklists, these frameworks that both Mike and Rick have shared. But what's been one of your favorite elements of today's conversation?
Yeah, I would say what Rick had talked about before, you know, with the, say, Rick, say you're saying one more time about the toolbox or the tool set, mindset.
Yep. Mindset, skill set, tool set.
Yeah. I would say that was the biggest takeaway was those three things and really, you know, aligning your business to that framework. And also to Mike's point, really around, you know, aligning towards business goals and then, you know, everything will work itself out that but you've got to come up with the metrics and the things that you're shooting for first. And then, you know, almost like you have to fall in love with the problem instead of the solution. So I think what Mike said was really helpful in that.
Love that. I've heard that before somewhere. You got to fall in love with the problem, not the solution. Good stuff there, Ben. And, you know, the other neat thing was I love how you brought up, you know, we all love our connections to the Metro Atlanta area as much as we love global supply chain, global business. And of course, with the CDC here in Metro Atlanta, you knew that we were going to play a big role in fighting this pandemic. Love that additional news you share on the front end of how Atlanta is going to be a very prominent, continued, maybe even enhanced position as we lead the fight globally through this pandemic and getting into that truly the post-pandemic environment landscape. They're all looking forward to
that's right.
To realize.
Fingers crossed.
That's right.
We'll get there.
Agreed. And we will. All right. So let's make sure our audience can connect with everyone here today. And Rick, let's start with you. How can folks learn more about the Clorox company?
Right. So they can certainly go to our website, and what they'll find there is that we're playing 100% offense. We've gone from surviving to thriving. And so they can check us out at www.clorox.com. And then for me personally, you can always connect with me on LinkedIn.
Thanks so much. And we'll make it easy. We're after that one click with the show notes. We'll post that there and really appreciate your time, Rick. All right, Mike, same question. How can folks connect with you?
Well, first of all, you know, for SAP, go to sap.com. In this, you know, virtual world we've entered into, we're putting a lot of self-tutorials up on there of design to operate, from the way you design, the way you plan, manufacture, logistics, warehouse, and manage assets, and for both discrete and in the process side. It's called Design Consume. So there's self-guided tours of the factory of the future up there. So there's a lot of cool things that we're doing to help reach out to help to our customer base, to help them see where we're going. So I would encourage everyone to go to sap.com, find the products, take those tours. But for me, you know, I every time I've been on here, just send it direct, mike.lackey@sap.com. Love to talk with you. you know, anything we can do to help you, you know, reach your business goals as one of our customers and partners, it's a win for, you know, the global world here. So that's why we're out there.
Well, Mike, and we sure do appreciate SAP's continued support of the Supply Chain City Series and all of your industry thought leadership. I really enjoyed lots of takeaways. I've got that proverbial 17 pages of notes from you and Rick here today, and that's what makes this journey we're on so rewarding. But Ben, all the cool things you're doing, all the, you know, we're going to have to start having you report from your journeys, all the different conversations and businesses you're exposed to. But how can folks connect with you, Ben?
Just LinkedIn is probably the best one. Obviously, a lot of Ben Harris is out there, but Benjamin J. Harris, hopefully we'll get you there with the Metro Atlanta Chamber, obviously. You can find me on Twitter as well. But yeah, LinkedIn is probably the best way. And then my email is bharris@macoc.com, and that's MACOC as in Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce.
Such a great conversation. I want to thank Mike Lackey, of course, with SAP, Rick McDonald with the Clorox Company, and, of course, my partner in crime, Ben Harris, with the Metro Atlanta Chamber. Great conversation, gentlemen. We look forward to doing it again. Mike, I think we've got an upcoming episode around the corner with another really neat supply chain and manufacturing success story, so stay tuned for that. To our audience, hopefully you enjoy this episode as much as we have. So many great takeaways here, practical takeaways. If you enjoy stuff like this, you can learn more and check out more of these podcasts at supplychainnow.com. Of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts from. So on behalf of our entire team here at Supply Chain Now, Scott Luton challenging you like we challenge our own team. Hey, do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. And on that note, we'll see you next time here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.